But you know what the strange thing about that was? For a long time, I wasn't sure that God remembered at all. Remember what? We've been asking for a son, a child, for years and years and years. And there was no child.
God remembers what? We had waited and waited. You have no idea what it was like to live in a culture where you're expected to have a child, and we had no children because, you see, my wife Elizabeth was barren. And we waited and waited. But, you know, we're used to waiting. I'm Jewish. We're used to waiting. My people has waited and waited and waited for generations. No, they waited for centuries. For what? They waited for a Messiah. They waited for a promised deliverer. And there was no Messiah. And there was no son. It was as though God had forgotten us. And have you ever had that feeling that God has forgotten you? I did. The scorn of not having a child. Oh, how we prayed. My wife prayed. I prayed. We prayed together. We went into the temple. We burned incense. And now it was finally too late. My wife was physically past any possibility of having a child. God did not answer our prayers. Even though my name Zechariah means God promises. Does he? I struggled. Where was God in all of this? And then, one day, to my utter surprise, God shocks us with his love and grace as he breaks into our life. Let me tell you the setting. This story, by the way, is recorded in the Gospel of Luke, which I believe you read this morning, and I know you were all paying close attention. And in that first chapter of Luke, it says, in the days of Herod, boy, that line says a lot. That says a lot. Herod the Great, we were living in a dark time. Herod had ruled almost 40 years. He was an evil despot. He was one of our darkest period of Jewish history, and the time was getting darker as he grew older. They call him Herod the Great. I don't know why. They should have called him Herod the Mad Genius. Because as he grew older, he became more eccentric. He made more misery for everyone that lived in the community. But he was smart. Oh, he was very smart. Herod built some of the greatest monuments and buildings in our country's history. And that included taking that small temple that was built in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, and he completely refurbished it. He expanded it. It became known as Herod's Temple. And in the days of the Messiah Jesus, everyone called it Herod's Temple. And we were proud of that gorgeous piece of architecture. It was great in its beauty. But Herod was also a madman. You see, he built many buildings. He built cities. And among the many buildings he built included many other temples to many other gods, because, you see, Herod didn't want to offend any of the gods. He wanted to please them all. And so he built all over the country temples to other gods. And he was cruel. Herod didn't trust anyone, including members of his own family. I don't remember how many sons he had, but I know he murdered three of them. Two by strangulation, because he suspected his sons were trying to grasp power from him. He believed in polygamy. He had 10 wives, and he promoted polygamy in the country. Oh, we were in bad shape. And then, at that point, God breaks in. And in the darkness that was our experience under Herod the Great, God breaks in and announces a coming light. He announces that something is going to happen. God is about to move. And that was the time when I received my call. My call to go up to Jerusalem and serve in the temple. Now, you may say that's no big deal, but listen, it was a huge deal. You see, I am a descendant of Aaron, who was the brother of Moses. And everyone born from the tribe of Aaron was called a Levite. And all Levites were assigned the priesthood in Israel. Now, that meant there were a lot of us. There were a lot of priests in those days. And it was our job to maintain the temple. Now listen closely, because this is amazing. There were 24 divisions of priests in Israel. And every division had about 800 priests. That's a lot of priests. 800. And their assignment, each division, was to be responsible for 2 weeks a year in the temple and one priest each week. Now, you mathematicians can do your math. If you need two people out of 800, what's your odds? One in 400. That's why I had grown old, and I had never, ever been called upon to minister in the temple in Jerusalem. I'd never done that before, and now I was old. But amazingly, that year, as they gathered together and they drew lots to find out which two of the 800 would be assigned duty for 2 weeks, my name was drawn. Now think about that. Was that luck? Was that coincidence? Or is that God at work? I didn't understand at that time. But I went up to Jerusalem to assume my duties, which meant offering the morning sacrifice and burning incense in the morning and in the evening. And when the priest would go into the temple, a crowd would gather out in the courtyard to worship. And so I go into the temple that day, and I began my journey and I began my duties. And about the third or fourth day into my journey into the temple, as I was minding my own business, and as I was offering and offerings that morning and burning the incense, suddenly I was aware that I wasn't alone in that temple room. It was like there was an ET, I guess you'd call it, an extraterrestrial being suddenly seemed to be in that room with me. And I was filled with a sense of awe, and I looked up. And there on the right side of the altar was something. A he, a she. I didn't know what it was. He didn't have wings, by the way. And shortly thereafter, he did say my name was Gabriel, so I knew it had to be a man. And there he was standing. Now, if that was you, how would you respond? I was terrified. Would you be? I think so. I was terrified. I'm glad you would be too. That makes me normal. I mean, wouldn't you be? Where did this man? And he says, Zechariah, be not afraid. I have come to bring you good tidings. He called me by name. He knew my name. And the first thing the angel said was, be not afraid. He didn't want me to be filled with terror. He wanted me to experience love and peace. He wanted me to know that God had not forgotten me. Now, why was this shocking? I come from the nation of Israel, and for over 400 years, no one had heard from God. Do you know how long 400 years is? That's about all the way back to you Americans when the pilgrims landed on Plymouth Rock. From then till today, there was no vision from God. There was no word from God. The skies were brass and God was silent. We had become a forgotten people. And here I am suddenly receiving a vision that had not happened for centuries. And the angel continued, and I'm glad to see that you have some kind of magical something that puts my words on the screen. So you can see there, he says, don't be afraid, your prayer has been heard. Remember, we had been praying for decades. We had already lost hope. Your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you are to call him John. And he will be a joy and a delight to you, and many will rejoice because of his birth. I was dumbstruck. A son, a child, in my old age? What a gift, what a joy to know that at last I can have a son and the shame of my wife can be taken away in the community. And he gave him a name. He said his name will be John. What does John mean? Anybody know? God is gracious, or God's gift. God is gracious. Well, I had a lot to learn about what that meant. You see, I thought it was enough that my prayers had been answered and that my wife was going to have a baby in her old years, as strange as that seemed. But I had more to learn. My prayer was just about myself and my wife's shame. Some of you might understand what it is to live in a society where you grow old and you have no children. And other people talk about you. What happened? What went wrong? It was worse back then. But you see, I didn't understand at that time. God had another purpose. God's purpose was not just to answer my prayers, but to answer the prayers of the nation. I wanted myself to be saved. God wanted his nation to be saved. Because you see, I told you we lived in a dark time, in the time of Herod. Polygamy was rampant. Temple prostitution was available. Worshipping of other gods was everywhere. And I've been to your country. I've seen a little bit of your X-rated movies and television and your pornographic magazines and your newsstands and your politicians. And I understand that in many ways you look pretty much like we did back at that time. And we needed revival in the land. And oh, how some of us prayed for revival. But we didn't know if God would hear us. We didn't know if he would answer our prayers. John, he said his name would be called. God is gracious. But I didn't yet understand what God meant when he gave me that promise. And so there I was in the temple that day. And the angel appears. And I'm dumbfounded. Now remember, I'm a priest. I'm a priest. I'm supposed to be a man of faith. Well, when the angel announced that day that I was going to have a son, do you know what I did? I didn't believe him. Have you ever done that? You wanted something badly and you prayed and prayed and prayed. It never happened. And then you were quite sure God isn't listening to you anyway. And so you know what I did when this miraculous apparition appeared, I questioned them. I challenged them. How can this be? And then you know what else I did? We humans are so foolish. I reminded him that my wife was too old to have a baby and that I was an old man. You ever felt it was necessary to tell God what the truth is? Because God didn't know? Or God didn't understand, so it's your job to wise him up? So I told the angel, well, look, you don't understand. My wife's too old. I'm too old. Let's talk maybe about something else. And the angel Gabriel said, no, because you have not believed. You see, I wanted a son just for myself. I didn't understand God's purpose. I wasn't listening when he said, in that verse up there that you can see, he will be great in the sight of the Lord. And he will bring many back to the people of Israel, to the Lord their God. And he will go on before the Lord in the spirit and power of Elijah to turn the hearts of the parents to their children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the righteous to make ready a people for the Lord. I wasn't quite sure what that meant at the time. I was still struggling to believe it, and so I doubted that this would be possible. And then he said, because you did not believe, you will not be able to speak again until this comes about, which means at least 9 months later, right? Could not speak. Unbelief does that. It makes you mute. It gives you no answers because you have nothing more you can say when you do not believe. And I had nothing more I could say. Well, meanwhile, the people outside were getting restless. I should have come out of the temple by now, but I hadn't, and they're beginning to wonder, what's going on? And suddenly I walked out of the temple into the courtyard, and they saw me, but I couldn't speak to them. I could only use sign language and hand signals. And then they knew that I had seen something strange, but they didn't know what it was, except that maybe God was doing something. Well, the end of the week came, and I couldn't hurry fast enough to get home to my good wife, Elizabeth, to break the news to her, to this elderly woman. Guess what? You're going to be the mother of a child, not only a child, but it will be a son, and his name will be called John. And she was overcome with joy. She could hardly believe it, but she did. She was overcome with joy that God would be so gracious. And you know, God gave her a double blessing. First of all, he said, you're going to have a son. And secondly, your husband won't be able to talk to you for 9 months. Now, that's probably every housewife's dream, right? 9 months of silence. I'm in the house. I can't talk to her. Oh, she loved those 9 months. And the first 5 months, she went into seclusion because, you know, when you're pregnant in old age, it isn't too easy. And then she came out, and then the day came. The day came for the birth. And she brought forth a child, and it was a boy, beautiful, healthy, just like the angel had promised. And the whole community and the neighborhood and the friends and the relatives, they all gathered together and they rejoiced with us at this miraculous event that my wife Elizabeth's shame should be removed. But they didn't understand any more than just that much. Well, then 8 days later, it was time for the son to be circumcised. My son John, in our tradition, was circumcised on the 8th day, which is also the day that we give him his name. Well, at that time, all the relatives and friends showed up. They all had opinions on what his name should be. And they all said, well, look, this is your only son, your first son, your only son. He has to be named after his father. Name him Zechariah. Praise God, my wife Elizabeth, she was faithful, and she stuck to her guns, and she, there weren't guns back then, and she said, no, his name shall be John. And they argued with her, of course, and they said, but nobody in your family has been named John. Why would you name him John? And she couldn't win the argument that time, so they finally decided to ask me. Nobody asked me because it was very awkward. I only could use hand signals. So I indicated something to write on, and so they brought me a tablet. And I wrote down on that tablet, his name is John. And suddenly, just like that, my mouth opened. I was no longer dumb. I could speak again. I began praising God, and all the people around, they stood in amazement because they knew this was a miracle unfolding before their eyes, and they saw something they had never seen before. And we praised God for what he had done. Now, why does God work that way? Why does he catch us that way? Why does he surprise us and shock us in such unusual ways? Why does he make us wait so long for an answer? Well, I discovered, first of all, that waiting does do something to you. It makes you develop character. And character develops integrity. And other virtues begin to unfold because you've learned the gift of patience. I discovered by waiting also that when the gift is finally given to you, it is so much sweeter. You know, if you live in a society where you're used to instant satisfaction and 3 days is too long to wait, you don't understand the sweetness of something that is given to you when you have waited so long. And thirdly, I discovered that God's ways are beyond understanding. There are things that I will never understand about the way he works. He said, his name shall be called John. John means God is gracious. But I never really understood how that graciousness was to work out. You see, he didn't tell me how John's mission would be accomplished. God is gracious. I had to learn that faith means being able to accept what God has said, even though it doesn't make sense, even though he doesn't work in my life the way I thought he should have worked in my life. You see, here's what I thought. I have a son. I've waited a lifetime for that son. I want somebody to follow in my footsteps. I want him to be famous like me. I want him to be a priest. Well, I wasn't so famous, but I wanted him to be famous. I wanted him to be a successful priest, well known in the community. I wanted some son who could inherit my estate. I wanted a son who could go to the best universities and schools. I was prepared to sacrifice everything for this son. That's what I wanted to do. But God had other plans. God never told me that when this young man was still in his late teens, he would come to his parents one day and he would say, "Mother, Dad, God is calling me to leave home and he's calling me to go out into the desert." Now, God didn't tell me that before. Do you know what it's like to wait all your life to have a son or a gift, and then one day when he's still a teen, all your dreams begin to dissolve because he's going in a different direction. He's going out into the desert. You see, I wanted him to support me in my old age, and I was getting very old. Instead, God wanted to support him through the desert. And it was a simple support of simply locusts and wild honey. I wanted a son who could have the best education in the country. I'd been saving for that day. God had a different university to send him to, the University of the Desert. And there in the desert, he would learn things about God that he would never learn in any academic institution. There he heard God speak and define his mission to our X-rated society. A society in which polygamy was rampant. A society in which marriages were coming apart. A society in which men were sometimes exchanging their wives as often as they changed their robes. A society where fathers had abdicated their family responsibility and sons were alienated from their fathers. That was the kind of society John was asked to speak to. And at the age of 30, he came out of that desert. And I could see a radical change with him. There was fire in his belly. There was a fire in his bones and a passion within him and a fire burning for a righteousness and a holiness that he proclaimed, saying, "Prepare the way of the Lord. Repent. Repent. Turn from your ways and come back. The Messiah is coming." And the people were overwhelmed by the authority with which he spoke, and they went out into the desert and they listened. And they turned, and they changed. Oh, being in the desert had given him courage. Being in the desert those years had put steel in his backbone. There was no one that he was afraid to speak to, not even the highest authorities in the land. Not even the king himself escaped his words of harsh judgment. He dared to speak to Herod, not Herod the Great who was dead, but Herod's son, Herod Tetrarch. He dared to condemn Herod the Tetrarch for the abuse of power and for committing adultery. You see, Herod among his many wives, had decided to take another wife, which was the wife of his brother Philip. Her name was Herodias. And John said, that is wrong for you to take your brother's wife. And you can imagine Herod, no king would put up with that kind of stuff. And so Herod had him arrested and thrown into prison. But nobody dared touch him beyond that because John spoke with great authority, and the people thought he was Elijah come back from the dead. And they didn't dare touch him. But Herodias, Herod's wife, she couldn't forget that man in prison who had criticized her. Maybe you remember that story. One day when Herod was having a great feast and probably half inebriated, Herodias, his newly acquired wife, his former sister-in-law, had a daughter who knew how to dance in a very sensual way. And she put on this fancy dance before the king, and Herod was so impressed with his wife's daughter that when she was done dancing, he says to her, look, you did such a good job. Tell me whatever you want, I will give it to you. A boastful claim if there ever was one. And the daughter went to her mother Herodias. She says, I've just been told I can have anything I want. What do you think I should ask for? Remember what the answer was? The head of John the Baptist on a platter. And they went down into that prison cell where my son lay languishing. And they brought him out and they chopped off his head and they put it on a platter and they brought it to King Herod, my son. He had only been ministering for 1 year. Was he mad, I thought? Was he crazy for what he had done? They cut off the head of my only son, John. Is this really what God had intended? Was he mad? He was a fool, all right, but he was a fool for the Lord. He dared to speak to issues that no one else would dare to speak about. He was a fool, but he knew what God was asking of him, and he did it, no matter what the cost. God is gracious. That's what John means. And I discovered God is gracious. Zechariah, God remembers. And I discovered God does remember. But not in the way I thought it should be. God is gracious. He only served for 1 year. He gave me a son, and he took him away again after 1 year of ministry. But then God gave us another son, and he took him away after only 3 years of ministry. But during that 1 year, many hearts were turned back to the Lord. Many hearts were reconverted to the Lord their God. Many hearts were prepared for the coming of the Messiah that was following right behind John, and I discovered it was necessary for John now to step aside so that the real Messiah could be heard, because John recognized that the Messiah who is coming, I'm not even worthy to untie his shoelaces. God is gracious. That I learned. And I also learned to bow my head to the mystery of what that means. Because God doesn't work according to my plans or my timetables, but he remembers and he is gracious. And I bow my head in reverence and in awe to a God that still delights in shocking us with his love and with his grace. And you? Have you received that gift? Have you received that Messiah? You can even hear yet the voice of my son John. it's still a voice calling in the wilderness, a voice that lasted only 1 year. But it was enough. And because my son John lived even for that 1 year of ministry, the world became a different place. And I give God the glory. And I pray that what he announced, that gift that was coming, has also been received by each of you. And may God bless you and be with you.